Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Any player who scored a men's FIFA World Cup goal for England since France 98.
How many is there altogether?
28.
28.
Sake.
I'll go 18, just because I don't want David to get his flex out of here.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The full house. Enda, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Dara, Matt, how are you folks?
Morning, Jer.
Jer,
where do you want to start? A weekend with almost too much sport. That's the busiest weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Between hours of the day covered as well.
Yeah.
You know,
like it was actually was relentless.
Pretty much
you
all
just
day. Yeah, 24 hours nearly.
Sat in your jocks with a halo of watsits around you.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty nice, though. There was no massive overlap our Sunday with the Wimbledon final on at the same time as Dublin Kerry, but
kind it did
of
last nearly 5 hours.
You caught the end of it anyway.
Yeah.
So. I thought it was bearable. It was a bearable amount of sport.
The women's final was momentarily brilliant with the saving of the three championship points and then just the unfortunate third set collapse. But yeah, I don't know. All the Dubs fans very angry. Very angry.
Yeah.
All the England fans very hopeful.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen to them on Wednesday night. They're the Wednesday game.
They're Wednesday.
Yeah.
France and Spain. Yeah.
8 o'clock kickoffs. Finally. Where have you been all my life?
Brilliant, isn't it?
Oh,
the finals. The final's 10 o'clock though.
It's on a Sunday. It's all right.
10, that's grand. You got to hurling before it. Like,
you have to recover then.
The golf.
The golf.
Yeah, we're Dublin hard done by. What do you reckon? What's the verdict?
I'd say they probably would be looking at themselves more than the... Obviously, the square ball is a square ball, but like...
Yeah.
Any of you not been involved in a big match in Croke Park where your team has been ridden by a square ball? Kildare certainly have. Kevin, don't really make it to Croke Park in your lifetime.
All right, no need for that.
I think that the square ball rule has been changed so many times as well that who even knows what it is anymore?
There's two separate ones. When the ball's in play, it's from when it's kicked. Mm. And when the ball's out of play, it's when it arrives. So it's like the offside rule, essentially. But I would agree with you. I only found that out the last time. I was like, that's a square ball. You're like, oh no, it's when the ball is kicked.
All right. He was midair and also kind of outside of the box when he makes connection with it, so it's also...
It is a square ball, though.
It is a square ball, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said for the umpire's role and all that. Like both umpires are kind of just watching the score, and I know their job is to tell you whether the ball's gone over the bar or not, primarily. But especially when you're in Crow Park as well.
There's ball watching going on, for sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm.
One of them needs to be along the line.
Yeah,
Was the second one over the line? I don't know. At the time... I was most interested in the fact that he'd headed it off the line.
Yeah.
Faced it off the line. I was like, well, he just faced it off the line.
Yeah.
Whether or not it had gone over from the lower cue,
secondary.
You couldn't tell.
No, you couldn't. And I think the square ball one is pretty egregious, to be honest, because that's you can see that. The one
in real time, it looked like it was very close to the...
Yeah.
But people are saying like it's tough on the umpires, and like it is, but then why do we have the rule then if we can't officiate it in real time? And we don't have VAR or anything like that, so why do we have that rule? If it's too hard to officiate, then what's the point of it?
Evan Comerford seemed to think he'd saved it as well, did he?
Initially it seemed like it, but then he changed his argument, I think, once he had saw the replay.
Because he was pointing up at the big screen, look at that, I saved it. And then I was like, I don't think he did.
Yeah.
I don't think he saved that.
Should have saved it though, shouldn't he?
That's in.
No, I don't
think he should have saved that at all. That's extremely harsh.
Is it though?
I think he did really well to try and keep it out. I mean, the ball was dropping in and someone doubles on it and he saves it onto the crossbar and it goes in behind the line. Evan Comfort's had some pretty big mistakes over the course of the last couple of months. I don't think that is one of them, to be totally honest. In my opinion.
Not sure I agree with that. I think he should do better. But I'm not a goalkeeper, so...
I thought he had a really good game.
Shifty's been in touch about Wicklow. All the Wicklow people have
that
suddenly...
That was absolutely amazing.
They've had their moment in the sun. One of my WhatsApp groups, 5 minutes in, this pitch just looks too big for them.
Yeah.
This is going to be a hockey... cricket score. Not a hockey score. A hockeying. And I was like, all right. I was out and about. And then suddenly it's like you're looking at the score going, well, hang on a second.
Yeah.
And then the last 5 minutes were just brilliant.
Mm.
It was like... pre-game,
the whole second half, to be honest, was really gripped me. I was texting my mate, and we were both obviously watching the first half, and he turned it off at halftime, and I was like, look, strange things have happened, but it will be one of the more strange things that has happened if they do get over the line. And he texted me back and said, not a hope. And then 10 minutes to go, I was like, you might want to turn this back on.
Pre-game, Paddy Andrews had made the point that for down, this is all about Sam Maguire football, and it's like a mechanical thing where you are trying to achieve something which is not the, the thing itself you're achieving. For Wicklow, it's like the glory of the game and the moment. Yeah. And he asked the question, you know, in the final 5 minutes, if it comes down to it, will that actually mean more to them? I was like, I'm not sure. But I mean, it's as reasonable an explanation for the madness that happened.
Yeah.
Down are like, we're going to be playing Sam Maguire football. We've already won this thing. Wicklow are like, this is my one chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something to be said for the romance.
Ah, it was just
disaster for Down.
For all their whinging, they'd want to go and win it. Like, you know what I mean?
Down.
Oh, we're so dominant in this competition, we deserve to be in Sam Maguire. Go and win it then.
Yeah, yeah. No, sorry. I do agree that it's actually from a situation where they've had a good year. If they win it, what do you say now?
Yeah.
We beat Donegal in a one-off game.
Yeah.
Special price for that? There isn't.
They won the league, Division 3. Yeah, I don't know how much whinging they themselves did, I suppose, but I think it was more of a cry from outside of Down to be like, Down are too good to be doing this, than there was actually from Down people and the Down management and the Down players. I don't think there was much from them to be like, ah, this is ridiculous.
No.
I think it was more people looked at Down and thought.
I don't think they were...
I think it's the same
overtly
Kildare.
Saying,
like, we are.
They weren't overtly saying, oh, this is disgraceful that we're in this competition. Now, there was a sense, though, from the camp that they were like, we should be playing above where
they
we're playing.
Be.
Well, I think, yeah, I personally haven't really.
Prove it on the pitch.
I didn't really get that sense from them, but maybe there was. I'm sure maybe from within there was, but that is the reality of it. Like, they've let themselves down, excuse the pun. But to be fair, Wicklow are one of the... There have been a lot of counties who have embraced the Talent Cup for what it is. But Wicklow are one of the counties that has really done that and have progressed year on year within it, having lost the semi-final there last year that they probably felt as though they left behind them. And then won a semi-final as big underdogs last day, and then the biggest underdogs of all against a team, obviously, that were expected to go and walk the competition. So it was brilliant for them. It was brilliant for them. And I won't have a bad word said about Talent Cup. I think it's been brilliant.
Yeah, no, I think it's been a massive success over the last 4 or 5 years, hasn't it?
Would we have a third one? Is there anything to be said for a third tier?
Do you know what? I don't think so.
The Division 4 team just won it.
I don't think you need a third one. There's room. I don't know, because it's hard to say that now when Dennis Ryan tells us the World Cup final is at 8 o'clock on Sunday.
There you go, fake news from Dara.
Yeah, misinformation. What? The World Cup final is at 8 o'clock.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Ireland, New Zealand, 5 past 8.
Oh, I was just looking forward to the third place playoff.
Okay.
Which is at 10 o'clock. Sorry.
It must be on Saturday. The scoring into the hill thing seems to be...
Claimed a few more souls.
Growing some legs, doesn't it? Yeah. The second half, Wicklow scored, 1-17? Or something mad.
Were they the only ones over the weekend who did the most scoring into that end?
No, sorry. They scored into the opposite.
Oh, sorry.
As well, yeah. But no, sorry. I think Wicklow are probably the story of the weekend, to be honest.
Well, shall we
hop
into the performance rankings?
The good.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber.
Off the balls. Performance rankings.
So it is a massive weekend of sport, as you mentioned, Ger. We'll start off with Dublin Kerry, because as Matthew says, Wicklow are one of the stories of the weekend, but the most recent is the Dublin Kerry game yesterday. Kerry coming out on top into the final with Mayo. It's a big one. David Clifford deserves a special mention here for kicking the ball almost out of Croke Park at the end of the game.
It was a sensational achievement. That's the best thing he did in the game.
One of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
That's what you'd be led to believe, all right, yeah.
It was outrageous.
Yeah.
They should definitely do a challenge.
It was actually physically outrageous.
Great
I don't
catch,
know how...
but a Dublin fan as well. Yeah, he was a bit too happy for my life.
If anybody hasn't seen this, right, it's like, is it 20 rows from the bottom of the top tier?
Yeah.
From the top of the top tier. Like, what?
From the back wall.
You... Like when you stand up there, you get vertigo.
Yeah.
Mm. I've had tickets up there a couple of times and like very slowly going up the steps going, whoa.
That's where we sat there, the Kerry Tyrone game.
Yeah, right up
the back. A little
bit
further over, yeah. We were against the back wall.
Yeah, it is miles away from the pitch.
And you do get the vibe that was just like an inverted kick. He didn't even...
Well, there was all the blood was flowing at that stage. It's full time. The ball breaks to me. 70 minutes. The hooter goes.
It looked like he wanted to do it 5 seconds before, but he had a look at the clock and was like, can't do this just yet.
You still could have, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Quiet game for David Clifford, just the 1-5 for him. You know, so Dublin managed to genuinely actually did keep him quite quiet.
They did. They did really well. Well, the goal came from a penalty, you know. So
he missed, yeah.
Although it will count as a from play, like, yeah. Essentially that's a goal from, it's not officially from a place ball, but that's 5 points. He had a couple of wides, a couple of block down chances, and didn't take Davy Byrne on as much as maybe he's taken other players on. So obviously he saw something. I'd say Dublin would be very happy.
I think they did a good job on him, yeah.
They were in the game, yep, as a result of what they did. Now, afterwards, Gerard Brennan was like, yeah, we kept the two, him and Paddy, down. But Paddy ended up being man of the match, and I wonder would they do something different if they had their time back, or maybe a different constellation of available players.
It actually is the most ridiculous sort of lineup that you can have, where David Clifford doesn't have a great game, Dylan Gainey didn't live up to what he's done throughout the year, and then Paddy Clifford just pops up and is one of the best players on the pitch and tears Dublin apart. It's like Dublin, Donegal got a lot of flack last year in the All-Ireland final, rightly so, because of the way they went at the game and went at the Kerry forward line. But it is almost an impossible task when you have that much star power in the Kerry front six, that you just, there's no way of marking them all. You, yeah, mark one of them out of the game, another one pops up, and then Joe O'Connor comes up. You know,
did they do enough? Like, they did, you know, they did enough to keep themselves in the game, to give themselves a shot. And like, the reason Dublin lost is because they're kicking. Like, they created the chances that were required to win that game. And, you know, as Gerard Brennan said, they didn't bring their shooting boots.
Well,
a few referee decisions.
I think they went goals too early in the second half. They were over elaborate, yeah, in front of the, like, particularly inside the D. You're thinking maybe the whole scoring into the hill end was more difficult, and the wind seemed to be gusting and swirling. But like, there's definitely a few chances where Costello missed one and then kicked one from almost exactly the same spot a few minutes later. Mm. They were creating chances relatively easy in the first half, and that they were starved of possession, but when they got it, they would go. And every time they went, they were getting a kick off.
Yeah, I think they missed Pádraig Ó Cuaig Byrne as well in that second half, because right at the throw-in, at the restart, he seemed to pick up some type of injury. I don't know.
Very start of the second half.
Yeah, it seemed like and he was carrying it. He was kind of limping for the rest of the half, and he was brought off probably earlier than he normally would be. So that was actually a big loss as well during that period. So I don't know. I think a lot probably went against them too. So
I think Kerry didn't play well, and I think that if they were going to get caught this year, it was in a situation like that. Hard to know what's going to happen now in the Mayo game. Somebody's pointing out that Mayo haven't actually beaten, is it Paul Fitzpatrick in the...
You haven't beaten Division 1 team?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be Monaghan, but they're technically Division 2 team now, really, aren't they?
None of the top six in the country was, I think, yeah, the specific...
That's probably the first 70-minute performance Mayo put in, though, all season.
Yeah, and like, there's a lot to be said for arriving with the vast majority of your players fit and in form.
Absolutely. Things did go against Dublin, though, you would say, in yesterday's loss to Kerry. And Gerard Brennan, speaking to the media here, he was pointing out that maybe we should be starting to look at some more technology in the game.
Thanks, Tommy. Two areas, application of rules and our shooting boots, Tommy. And they're the two carries we fell short. And I suppose in the first one, to be fair to inter-county officials, the game is so fast, and certainly with Gaelic games, the new rules, it's up and down. So it's challenging for match day officials. And I would feel very strongly, Tommy, that both sets of players today and other inter-county players, even hurling as well, watching some of the games, that video-assisted technology has to come into play for key decisions, because there were obviously three key decisions, of a couple of decisions, more than that, that didn't go our way today. And if the officials had an opportunity to have just a quick look, take 30 seconds out, stop the clock, those decisions would have gone a different direction. So that's the first one, I guess. The second one, Tommy, credit to Kerry, congratulations to them on their shooting. They just were a bit more accurate today. I know we probably had to go to 10 more shots than Kerry today. Just didn't go over or go in. Kerry took their opportunities. We may have finished around 55% shot to score ratio. They were up in the mid to high 60s, and So we had enough opportunities as well, despite some of the decisions that didn't go right.
Jack referenced luck in his press conference. I think he did anyway. I hope that he did. When you're talking about those decisions, what are you referring to? Because there's probably a couple of things that were on the periphery for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose the first one, the penalty, we teach our players and coach them how to tackle as a second man coming in, have your hands down around your side. And obviously, Alex Gavin was putting a bit of heat on Joe O'Connor and forced Joe to turn into Padder. And Padder had his hands down by his side, and Padder takes the contact on the chest. And the penalty, so that was a poor decision. Then you have a look at the second goal, and it was a square ball to Sean O'Brien. It's not my opinion. You can certainly chat about the penalty one. All right, you could debate that, but certainly the second one was a square ball, because it's not my opinion. That's just a fact. And then our ball, well done to Shane Murphy. Had a fine game, two great saves, but having had a chance to look back at the video footage there, it was a goal for us as well. And the referees need assistance, because so much happened. You know, there really is so much happened.
It all starts with 30 seconds. And then next thing, we're spending 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes looking at decisions. So I'm not sure I agree with Jared Brennan here.
Down with VAR is what you're saying.
We can't have... I can't have the VAR decision when it comes to GAA as well as football. Takes up too much time with football as it is.
Goal line technology?
Yeah, I'd have no problem with goal line technology. I don't really quite understand how Hawkeye can't already do it.
So Hawkeye say they can do it.
Great.
So
why aren't we doing it?
The GAA don't do it. And I can't find a reason why. I've been looking back since the initial period where they brought Hawkeye technology in to measure points. They don't mention goal line technology. 2019 was the most recent time I can find it being brought up as an issue. And again, Hawkeye said at this point there was a... It was in a Kilkenny match where it looked like the ball had crossed over past the crossbar. Was I say a point?
Oh, yeah.
Remember
it was
this?
Against Waterford, was it?
It was against Tipperary.
Oh, Tipperary. Okay.
And Hawkeye came out and said at the time that the system that is installed in Croke Park can determine if the ball crosses the line. The system only gives a point when the ball has crossed the plane of the goal and in between the goalposts. This point in the trajectory of the flight is signified by the trajectory changing from red to white. This, therefore, does not occur when the ball is wide off the posts. And it goes on, they actually asked Alan Milton about this, the GAA Director of Communications, and he said that we don't have a mechanism to stop the play, so we can't just stop and check. That was the quote at the time.
You could fix that by having if Hawkeye signifies that it's been a goal, you automatically stop the play, and everything subsequent to that gets wiped.
Well, like if there's a decision that the referee feels like the umpires could have a say and they stop the play and they have a conversation.
Yeah, you can just throw the ball up.
But what's the difference?
I suppose the point is you don't have the rule at the moment to...
Yeah.
Now, there was an injury yesterday where the referee stopped play and then just gave a free to Kerry from where the ball had landed. And it was like... I haven't seen that before.
Mm.
Somebody went down. I can't actually remember who it was now. This is in the second half. And he stopped play for an injury. And then instead of throwing it up, it was like, we're going to restart with a free to you. So... There's also common sense, I guess, but maybe Congress and the Standing Rules Committee can have a look and go, this isn't going to happen again. We're going to fix this. We have the technology. We just need a thing in the rule book for it. But like somebody in the comments is pointing out that Dublin were 3 points up when the con chance happened. That would have been six. Like, but if they hadn't been over elaborate, there is a goal on and you want to have the killer score. I get it. They're killers. But 28 points was what Tyrone scored and they didn't score a goal. And
but that was the momentum swing there as well, because Kerry went up to the ends, Sean O'Brien scored a goal, and then was it Poddy or David Cliver kicked it two, and Sean O'Shea kicked it two, and suddenly Kerry were four up. So it was a 7 point swing, a 10 point swing, really, if Conn had a suck in the back of the net.
It did seem like the kicking into the hill / wind situation was playing into Dublin's mind, because there was one stage where there was 4 points in the game, it's 54 minutes in or so, and I was just questioning, I was like, Dublin were going for goal. They were going for goal the whole time. So this is a 2-point game, so, like, or a 2-score game. Take like, take your points, or take, or try to set up a 2-pointer. But obviously, they were reluctant to do that because they kicked a lot of wides and slash. It was hard to do or do that in.
Yeah, they kicked wide against the hill, but then they also just kicked the same ball over. You know, it wasn't like the wind suddenly was ripping them. Yeah, I thought the way that Limerick chased down the lead against Clare is the template for teams who are chasing stuff. Keep scoring, keep scoring, keep scoring.
Yeah. I thought when Sean Guyton came on, he's been great for them all year, particularly in the championship. I think he had one shot and it looked like he tried to put the boot through it, probably with in mind that the wind was going to impact the shot, and it went well wide because of that. So it probably was feeding into the mentality in the second half, which you kind of get to an extent. If you've watched all the games the weekend, you are like, probably need to do something about this. We can't just go about our business as we would. Like, the wind is clearly playing a big factor here. Maybe just a little bit overkill.
Mm.
I think Pewell makes a good point there. The umpire should concentrate on goals when the ball is around the goals. Hawkeye will look after the points. No need to be standing back looking up at the posts for a point.
Mm. Well, there is the fact that we have two people standing directly at the goal line issue. Yeah. But depending on whether the ball's like this much, not over the line, can they see that with the post in the way? It's also hands getting away, bodies getting away.
I saw Caro Kay making a point last night as well that the green flag umpire obviously is on the other side. So if the green, I know this is such a like pedantic sort of thing, but if the green flag is on the other side, the other umpire is standing beside the line and maybe has a better view of whether it crosses the line or not. It's a very good point. But I'm not sure what the fix is. Maybe you give them both.
The fix is making all green of the umpires be fully qualified referees as opposed to the referees' mates. Like, literally saying this for 20 years. If they were all full, particularly make it from the knockout series on. There are enough, or former referees. Like, if you want to age the referees out.
Yeah.
As opposed to, it's just your pals, because you trust them. And we've talked to referees about this before, and they're like, look, we really trust the people. We've got a good relationship with them, but like, some of them aren't good enough. You
There's
know?
Also a bit of a danger with that as well. And I'm not saying this does happen, but it's only human nature that, like, if you get on really well with a person, you're more likely to kind of just not query them and not question them. And that's not a good thing for the level that we're playing at here and how tight the fine margins are and how big the impact of them is.
There's seven officials. There's the load. Like,
there's enough,
a highly officiated game if you boost the quality of the people who are involved. And that's not a slight on the specifics of the, as in, you boost the qualifications of the people involved.
Yeah, and it is an incredibly, like, it's not an obvious decision either.
It's a near impossible decision, to be honest, in real
but
time.
It's just about, I suppose, maximising the kind of way in which you can get the decision right, and doing everything in your power to kind of make that decision as easy and as accurate as possible, while also kind of just being aware of the fact that it is, like, we still don't really know if it's even crossed the line. So whether the umpire is standing right beside it, he might not have been able to tell either, but he would have had a better chance of telling than where he was, you know, that sort of way. So
I'd say we're probably putting Kerry in the amber for the fact that they're in an All-Ireland final, but they didn't play particularly well. Where are we placing Dublin here?
I
don't necessarily think it was okay performance, probably not.
I'd have Kerry in the green.
I would as well,
and I would have Dublin in the amber. I wouldn't have Dublin in the red. I think Dublin are ending the season on a far higher note than they would have imagined they'd be doing maybe 6 weeks ago.
Yeah,
remember nobody was going to the Dublin games.
Yeah,
yeah,
like they were going to play a game in Parnell Park.
I remember going to Breffni Park thinking we're going to do a job on them.
Yeah, I remember we did do a job on them.
Exactly, yeah. That's where Dublin were at. Like,
I think we brought nearly double. I keep saying we, but it is we, I suppose. But double the. The people at Dublin had it Leinster final. Like, that's ridiculous stuff.
We'll probably We'll probably do our report card with Tommy Rennie this week as well. But I do think overall Dublin's season will be a success in the end. At the weekend, they were grand. They will have some.
They must have massive regrets because they could have taken Kerry out.
Yeah.
And they were big underdogs heading into it, and they had a big lead in the second half. And they had the control of the game if they wanted it there.
Right.
Kerry have rode their luck the last 2 weeks to a degree as well. Despite, like, they have got outrageous quality and they have been good and they've probably deserved to win both games on the balance of it. But there's been a lot of decisions that have gone in, a lot of, I mean, if you want to call them 50-50, is probably the easiest way of describing them. They might be 60-40, they might be 70-30, whatever, the way around. They might be all right, considering Tyrone and Dublin could well be better than Mayo.
Yeah.
But I think they'd probably be saying to themselves, and Jack O'Connor did allude to it yesterday, that they've a lot of improving to do. And there's a lot more in them. This isn't the best version of Kerry that we've seen, you know, that sort of way too. So, I'm not sure exactly what my point is there, but they've rode their luck a little bit, I think, the last 2 weeks. But you kind of have to do that, really, don't you? You're not going to be perfect week in, week out.
Yeah. Right, we'll move on to the other semi-final of the weekend. Mayo are in the All-Ireland final after beating Louth. A dominant performance from Mayo over the course of the weekend, and probably one of their best in this season, from the defence to the forward line. They were pretty unstoppable. But after the game, Andy Moran, he was speaking to the media, and he took issue with one question in particular here.
Andy, in terms of the build-up, do you think the penalty will go crazy again, or do you think they'll be burnt on 2 minutes?
Nah, see, like, you laugh at that, lads. I don't laugh at that. I find it very, actually, dismissive, if I'm being honest. I think it's a bullshit question, if I'm being honest. And I don't mean that in any disrespect, but I think if it's a disrespectful question. Our county have been starved the last 4 or 5 years. If they go a bit nuts, let them. You're going to go to a game tomorrow. Every single one of you are going to write the Kerry or Dublin are going to win the All-Ireland Final. Right? Right? Does anyone here think they're going to win the All-Ireland Final? No, thank you. So that question is nonsense. If our supporters want to enjoy it, let them enjoy it.
Best part about that was that somebody responded to him with no.
That's what I was just saying there. Who's doing that? I'd love to know. Again, who said
that? That was John Fogarty's question, by the way. And if you couldn't hear it, it's he asked, in terms of the build-up, do you think the county will go crazy again, or do you think they've been burnt too many times?
Like, I think it's as legitimate a question as Joe Canning pointing out that the Cork stuff has an impact. Yeah. And loads of people did deny this, right? Loads of people say that it has no impact one way or another. The outside noise is outside noise. And Patrick Horgan was a pain to point out. Nothing outside seeps in. But, like, I don't know if it's true. Like, there's a story there of a loud footballer being arrested by a Mayo guard in a jokey camera done by the, and maybe the Louth, maybe like afterwards, Horst Evan was at pains to point out that he wanted the county to go mad and enjoy it because they have to.
Yeah,
and he didn't think it had any impact on them, but he did think that the players played a little bit within themselves. And I think all of this is a complex soup of stuff that happens. And you can't point to one thing and say that's exactly the whole, that was, we lost it there and then, because there'd be a bad refereeing decision or a square ball or a penalty that wasn't, or, you know. I think these two things are true. The county will go mad.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the Mayo team that feeds off that. And I think maybe all the Mayo teams fed off that.
The slight thing, difference is, I suppose, as well, I know it's not referencing Annie Moran's thing there with the question or anything, but the Cork stuff is like, and the word that we use with it all the time is hype. And there's like an expectation of success that is there because it's, oh, we're going to go and do this, you know, we're going to win. I think the Mayo thing is just excitement, though. I think it's we're not expect, we didn't think we were going to be here this year, and we are. So we're going to go off rails here and enjoy the next 2 weeks. And I think as well is, and look, if you go losing All Ireland final, you're never going to be like, ah, grand, we'll be back, because that's not how it works. You may never be back.
Well, this team will never be back.
Yeah, well, we can get on to that too, yeah. But it won't be the end of the world if they don't win this final. It won't be the end of the world. So I think they'll go into it with a sense of freedom. Not the players, the fans. The county have a bit of, yeah, this is great. Let's just enjoy this and see what happens. I don't think it's a case of, oh, we're going to beat Kerry. I don't think we're saying we're better than Kerry. We're, you know, I don't think that's what it is. But I don't think... I don't think it's a bad question. I don't think it's a mad question. But I don't think Andy Moran's response is anyway bad either. I think it's perfect.
I think it works.
Brilliant,
doesn't it?
It's exactly what we saw. With John Kiley, did a similar thing.
I don't think it's a bullshit question.
I don't think it is either. No.
So that's the only. But everything else he says, you can largely agree with. They should go for it. They should enjoy it.
I don't think he thinks it's a bullshit question either, though. I know he said that. Do you know what I mean? But I don't.
He does talk about it in the press conference as well, where he said that his number one priority has been checked off, and that is reconnecting this team with the fans. And this answer will go a long way to also doing that.
Yeah.
You know.
So he is playing into it a little bit, but it's perfect because this is like a rallying call to his players. He's not really talking to Fogarty there. He's not answering his question.
He's talking directly
to his players.
I know.
See, John Fogarty. It's an individual thing. It's a fair point. Yeah.
That's the bit where, like, I wonder if he had his time again, would he give the same answer but not say it's a bullshit question?
Yeah.
Mm. I think the premise of this question is bullshit as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
I do think it was something he probably had ready to say. I was listening to him talk to Midwest after as well, and the first question they brought up was kind of like the talk going into this game, it being a 50-50 game, could go either way. And he was almost, he kind of said, I felt like a lot of people were bigging up Louth. So he's obviously come into this game with a bit of a chip on his shoulder, whether that's a thing he's decided to do or not. Like,
yes. And so obviously the bit where he points out to every single journalist who's there going, none of you are going to back us in the final as well. That's also already grist in the mill.
Yeah. And I'm here for it. Like, I love that type of stuff. And I know we said it before. I find it so funny that someone actually said no to his question.
Yeah, that's brave. I'm not sure.
Does anybody here think Mayo are going to win All Ireland? No.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think they're whoever says it's at the very back of the room, so you can just about. Louth were incredibly disappointing, weren't they?
Yeah.
They just didn't turn up.
Yeah, they fell flat. Mayo were very good though.
Yeah,
you got to give them credit. The front six, especially with like the way that Kobe operates with Ryan O'Donoghue. That is a serious outfit.
We were talking about it when we went to Mayo Cork, and you know, Ryan Donoghue has had a lot on his shoulders over the last few years in terms of having to carry that attack with a few players retiring or falling off a little bit. Those two lads, Darburn and Cole McDonald, just give him a certain freedom. The onus is no longer on him, and he's able to play his game, and he's probably their best forward, like, still. I know the two lads are the stars, but he is their best forward. The two-pointer kicks at the end, that's just class. It's just great to see. And like we can talk about the front six and the lads coming off the bench, Keane McHale and, you know, Tommy Conroy
was brilliant.
The impact he has, but they only have that because the platform of the rest of the team gave them. And I love the style of play they went after. It was almost like a throwback to the mid-noughties Ulster style, where it's just like, we live for turnovers. Mm. We love turnovers, and we're gonna earn all our points off them. And in a way, they kind of, I know they managed the kickouts very well, but they made it less important as well. Like, because Loud got ball from kickouts, but they still managed to turn the ball over after that. So, to put less of an onus on the kickouts as well is, That in itself should be commended, like, in the modern game.
I think we'll talk about it more when the final rolls around, but I do wonder, it is a bit of a risky tactic, the defensive sort of structure that they set up with it. It works man-to-man if you get the turnovers, but in the modern game you will be exposed if you don't get that turnover with the high press and the multiple men in the tackle. So, look, they're going to have to take the risk against Kerry. They could get torn apart, but if they sort of back off into a hybrid system like some teams tend to do sometimes when nerves get on top of them in big games, they could equally get torn apart. So you'd rather get torn apart doing it the way you should be doing it rather than falling back into some sort of hybrid system.
Like that individual brilliant defence, everybody's like, oh, you can't man mark all the lads. They're actually set up to do that. They are set up to have three or four man markers. Your defence will be chaos if you do that. It's like, well, we live in chaos. We are Mayo. They're 4-point underdogs. Don't know what people think about that. Like, if there was ever going to be a year where they have nothing to lose, Kobe's last year and his first year.
That's the only thing, isn't it? Like, I know, Matthew, you're saying that this isn't the end of the world if they don't win it. It's absolutely not, because there's something coming in Mayo, but obviously Kobe not being there from next year. Like, there is a certain feeling to it. It's like, this might be the best chance we get for a few years' time.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that at all. Yeah, no, for sure. I don't even know if there is something coming to Mayo. That's the thing. I'm not sure, but I just don't think that they would have expected to be here. But then again, when you are there, you do have to make the most of it. And Kobe not being there is obviously a huge thing, because he is, quite frankly, ridiculous.
It is.
He's ludicrous, isn't he?
His running style is like a middle distance runner. You were like, if he was representing Ireland at the Olympics, you'd be feeling pretty
confident.
That's
exactly what it is, yeah.
Him coming off the last bend. But then also, can you do the high jump? You do the pole vault? You probably could.
That,
him and Mondo going Mondo. Up against each other.
When he fields the ball, I know
doesn't
he
even
was,
have a pole.
It was called for a foul over Sam Mulroy.
Yeah.
That is like NBA level vertical. Like, that is ridiculous.
It was called for it. It's a bit rough. Yeah. But I think
that's
you can
exactly
hear
what he said.
Ah, that's,
yeah. It's just a bit rough.
Like, that's dominant. A man's play right there. Like.
Dominant. There was some really nice scenes after the game. It was very emotional as well, and some nice images of himself and Jordan Flynn as well with their mother, their half brothers. So it's such a bizarre situation. Like, how are we losing this guy?
Yeah,
we get him to an All Ireland final in his first year. How are we losing him next year? It's
there is an element is that like they know they're losing them this year, so that's why that's part of the reason why they've gotten to a final. It's because they know that this is the strongest they might be for a couple of years. I think there is a feeling like let's get there for Kobe now. Let's try and win one.
I remember we got slaughtered for doing a feature on Kobe after his league debut. People in the comments, yeah. Leave him alone. What are you doing talking about this? Like, oh, look at this. I'm like, all right, sorry, what?
Where? Mayo were in the green here. For sure.
Yeah.
Louder
yeah.
than the red, just the nature yeah. of their performance, even.
Great year, though, in
Devlin
in general,
after the game.
Well, yeah. It's great to get to an All Ireland semi final.
I think that
they'd still be annoyed with how they kind of petered out the Leinster Championship.
It's extremely similar to Meade's season last year. In which
except they've actually won something along
yeah.
the way.
I'm thinking more of the All Ireland Championship. Okay, yeah. yeah.
But, so I think, if you look at Louth reaching all Leinster final, get hockey the next year, come back and win it. Was it 2 years after that?
So they got hockeyed and then they got a bit closer and then they won.
Yeah.
It. Yeah.
So getting hockey this year is not the end of the road. The way it might have been for that Meath team, like, you know.
Yeah, we just don't know what they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Success for Louth again next year is an All Ireland quarter final.
Donald also sensational.
You know, Leinster, like, yeah, Leinster.
Yeah, he's a brilliant find as well. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
We should move on.
Yeah,
to the Tottenham Cup as well, because there was a sensational game between Wicklow and Down. Wicklow came out on top. Oisín Conville speaking to Tommy after the game here, and he cast his mind back to an earlier result this year that he thinks is what set them up for success this year.
After Longford, everything was questioned, and I didn't want to get out of the car when I drove down on that Tuesday night. And when I drove down the Tuesday night, every single player was there. Every single one of them looking for me for words of wisdom, but there was no words of wisdom. We just got dug in, we went at it. That was the night we won this. That was the night we won it. We didn't win it today, we won it then.
Surely you gave them words of wisdom at half time. You're 12 down. What are you saying to the team there? Because you weren't yourselves.
Right, well, there's no shouting and roaring, that's the first thing. We expected nerves, okay, but not to that level. So a lot of it was to do with nerves. The second part was they had 100% in their kickouts, had to change that, turn that around in the second half, 25% from shooting. If you want to go about a way to not win a game, that's probably right in the script. That's ideal.
You got a couple of scores going. Darcy with a two-pointer, McGrainer with a two-pointer. But the war dog, Dean Healy, he could have gone for a point and he took on the heart of the Down defence.
Yeah, we had an advantage at that stage. We were telling him, go, 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 kick a two-pointer, and off he goes. And hey, what can I say about him? He's just unbelievable. He just keeps delivering. He's just been there for us. Every time we needed him, every time the young lads need somebody to look up to, how to prepare for the game, how to conduct yourself within the game, and when it's in the melting pot, throw it to him.
I had a brilliant chat with your captain, Dean Healy, talking about the connection with the fans and embracing the hype, the energy, the momentum over the last little while. Two quick ones. Your family are with you. They're decked out in blue and gold. How much does that mean?
It means everything, and how my family have been treated since I went to Wicklow. And there was a lot of times where it would have been very easy for to tell us all to go back up the road. But how they've been treated, embraced. The two boys' biggest worry now is, what if Armagh play Wicklow next year? What happens there? So if that's not an excuse for a half and half jersey, I don't know what is. But look, at it's. I'm just so happy for all of those people who've been, like, when we went to Antrim, all those people who got us over the lane, same the last day. And what have we, 12,000 people here today? Incredible. Unbelievable. The noise was unreal.
All the lads in the dressing room have been waiting on you. I said I'd keep you 90 seconds. I kept you 2.5 minutes. Do you mind if you walk towards and I just hear what the noise is like when you walk in the door?
Thanks,
I'm going to walk with you. Oisín, congratulations.
Champion!
he could have picked up absolutely anything there when he was in that though. My God.
Absolutely.
Risky behaviour, yeah.
That was brilliant from Oisín McConville. The result he's referring to there is a loss to Longford. They lost by 1 point, and it was almost like the reverse of what they did in the Tottenham Cup. Wicklow were 11 points up at half time.
Wow.
They went on to lose that game by a point. They didn't do that the weekend.
No.
At one stage, I was looking at it, it was 25 minutes in, down were 110 to 3 points up, and then Wicklow go on to miss a penalty at 28 minutes, down score a second goal. And you're thinking, that's it. That's this game over. There's no way Wicklow are coming back.
Yeah.
But some of their score taken in the second half, like,
at a 2-pointer, McGrainer.
You'd be absolutely delighted if a Division One team were doing that.
Yeah, McGrainer kicked a 2-pointer, I think, out on the right hand side on his left boot. And just dropped in over. I think it was McGrainer anyway. Apologies if it wasn't, but it was ridiculous stuff. It's funny as well. He mentioned that game there because I was talking to Oisín last week, before the final, and they've had a couple of like close calls, I suppose. Obviously, that game, would you even call it a close call? They sort of just capitulated and lost that game. But the Dublin one as well, like, they should have beaten Dublin in the Leinster Championship and didn't. But he made it very like clear that we don't talk about the league anymore. We don't talk about that game. We talked about it a lot at the time and we responded well in the Championship, and it's not something we talk about at all anymore. But it's clearly something that was still eating away at him, because he'd mentioned that their main goal at the start of the year was to get out of Division 4 because Wicklow would view themselves as being above that, you know, in the same way that Down would probably have viewed themselves as being a Sam Maguire team. So to go and do what they did is, it's brilliant. It is brilliant. And it seems to be the Wicklow way that they do this sort of stuff. They kind of, they leave it until the second half to really start playing. I remember they played Westmeath in the quarterfinal of the Tottenham Cup last year, and Westmeath were 8 points up on two different occasions. And Wicklow went and got over the line. It was Dean Healy that day actually as well that kicked a last minute score. Last kick of the game actually was, I think it was the old Hooter thing where Hooter goes and you've won final play, and the final play went on for about 5 minutes and then Dean Healy kicked the winner. So he's been soldiering away for them for quite some time, so it's always great to see lads like him get their day in the sun. And it was a great occasion, I suppose.
Like he's instilled, McConville has instilled some type of just self, like extraordinary self belief in them, because he mentioned to Tommy after game that, you know, he was aware there was going to be nerves in the first half, and you know, in a way, you're kind of almost expecting to start off badly. Like any other team in the country, probably drops the head there. Like, and the way they were playing as well, like the goal. I forget who scored it, but the Mark Jackson had just missed the kick at the post, and it was running back, and it gets lobbed over him. And
Pat Haveron goes.
It was Pat Haveron, yeah. So, like when things like that happen, it's so easy for the heads to drop, and like, you could see that game petering out so easily, but to come back in the second half, and like even in, they didn't even start off that well in the second half. It wasn't for a few minutes until they got going. And then like, yeah, some of the scores are absolutely amazing. And Dean Healy, like that goal, he runs into a bit of a cul-de-sac, and most players in the country, I know he had the advantage, but you probably recycle that or just take a pop at it inside the arc. But to just put the head down and then be able to put the head down and then compose yourself to finish like that is just extraordinary. And I loved McConville's celebration after, because he took a second to himself, shook Conor Laverty's hand, and then almost stopped for a second in front of the Hogan, like gathered himself, and then kind of erupted in celebration. It was just, it's a beautiful moment. And I texted Luke Delaney from TalkSport, who's from Wicklow, who's a mate of mine, in the first half, being like, what's going on with your boys? Like, this is awful to watch. And then he texts me a full time being like, the greatest comeback Croke Park has ever seen. And it probably is. It's probably up there. And it's just great to see a team like that. And that's exactly what the Talisman Cup is for a Division 4 team to put in a performance like that on a big day, have their day in the sun. And yeah, it's great to see.
All right.
Wicklow, most certainly in the green.
Yeah.
After their Tottenham Cup,
going to be in the Sam Maguire next year.
Yeah,
that's huge for them.
Huge for them. I just want to correct you on one thing. It's Oisín up the north. Oisín. Not Oisín.
He didn't correct me when I called him Oisín. He was just a nice guy.
All right. Well, we move on to the World Cup. We had a few big games in the World Cup over the course of the weekend. England are into the semi-final. They play Argentina, and we have a France-Spain semi-final on the other draw. France getting the better of Morocco. But the England game against Norway is probably the game of the weekend. Erling Haaland was poor, you'd say, throughout the course of the game, didn't look fully fit, and he also came off when they were chasing the game. So you'd have to imagine that potentially he was either just wrecked or maybe carrying something going into the game. Declan Rice pulled out before the game. The reports are that he was sick for a couple of days beforehand, so he didn't make the team. But England scrape over the line thanks to Jude Bellingham. A genuine superstar, the looks of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's probably something we haven't seen with him for Real Madrid over the last season or so, but he's come to life in this World Cup. And he's just an amazing player to watch as well. He's a bit like Kobe McDonald. He strides through.
Yeah.
And glides over the grass.
When he arrived at Real, it's just obviously it did, last year was a shit show that nobody could do anything.
Yeah, it's similar with Mbappe as well, yeah. Yeah, like, it's worrying watching an England team where you kind of almost would have thought if they're to win games like that, Kane has to score. But if someone else has taken the, you know, the driving seat there, so to speak, like, that's a, it's a really good sign for England. And, like, I'd fancy them against Argentina, to be honest. I personally would have them as favourites. I don't think Argentina have been that convincing over the last few games. And England being able to dig out these wins the way they have, to come from behind a couple of times, it's looking good for them, unfortunately.
Whether it was tongue-in-cheek by Chris Sutton or not, I'm not sure, but he said that he thinks that Switzerland would have been a harder game for England.
Yeah, who knows?
Maybe he does, you know? Like, and maybe there's something specific that he's identified. They'd play in a low block. England would have to be creative. We've seen them really struggle to do that. Argentina will maybe do a bit of that, but at least there will also be a desire for them to try and score.
Rice obviously did play the first half as well. I see people pointing out in the comments, and then came off at half time. But yeah, neither team has been particularly convincing, to be honest. I do think as well, maybe it is a foul by the rule book, I don't know, but the Elliot Anderson falling, like, he's after being shot, and the push from Haaland to not give for the penalty is
soft, yeah.
I don't know, I just think it's like,
if that had happened while the ball was in the air, it would have been allowed, right?
Mm. Exactly. Yeah, because they went back, because it was disallowed, and then Norway retook the corner. I think that was a little bit iffy. There's obviously the stuff as well about the ball hitting the cable, which, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that, to be honest. Like, we go back to the Croatia Portugal game and then bringing out the snigomla or whatever they're calling it, and it showing up that it flicked off your man's hair.
Mm. Yeah, but they didn't register that it hit the overhead camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are we doing here?
So your multi-billion-dollar technology.
Your multi-billion technology, yeah. It's just,
obviously it didn't happen. No, you didn't see that.
Still just allows, you know, so you can still selectively choose what you want the outcome to be, which, you know, was always the fear with this sort of thing, and it seems as though it's being used for exactly that reason. So, no, don't get me wrong. As you say, with all these things, England still have to go and work their way up the pitch and score the goal. But, you know, we're following the rule book, so... So closely for all these things, and something like that, where clearly if it does hit it,
I don't think like the Norwegian team are up in arms about it if it doesn't hit it. Like, it's such a random thing to
pre-tournament. I don't think anybody had Thierry Henry, Zlatan and Alexi Lalas as one of those kind of must check things, did they? Everybody's like,
it's quite funny. I've seen a bit, they've sort of just been sneering at Alexi Lalas as well. Like, Zlatan, I remember one time Alexi Lalas went and they came back, and it was Zlatan was on the thing, and whoever was hosting said, "Oh, Alexi's gone and Zlatan's here," and he turned around, Zlatan, and was just like, you're welcome, America.
Well, Mary Halligan has it in the Irish Times today. If the ball touched the cable, then the cable had a better performance than Madueke for sure. Says Zlatan.
Madueke. That's such a stray, isn't it? It's true. It is true. It's a fair point. He wasn't good. But obviously that's such a unique way of putting, getting that across, you know. He's slightly more endearing as a pundit, I think, Zlatan, than he was as a player. Although he was an incredibly good player.
Maybe he's the new Roy Keane.
Yeah.
What's going on with Madueke and Saka?
Saka just must be hurt. He has to be, because Madueke's performances have not warranted him still starting in all the games.
Yeah, obviously want him on the pitch at the end.
Saka was really good. He did come on as
But that's the thing, though, is it's like, you go back to Mayo, it's like Tommy Conroy bringing him on. Like, you're getting great service out of him coming on.
Tommy's going to start the final?
I don't think so.
I like him. I think he really suits coming off the bench, Tommy Conroy. He really
27, 28 though.
Yeah. It's not, you know, he's just been injured. Yeah. I think there's a world where he, like, you know, becomes a starter again for Mayo if he can just get a handle on those injuries. But I think, yeah, but then again, it's one of them where it's like
football here.
Sorry, yeah. Yeah, I've gone on a rabbit hole in my own head here.
Mm.
You might regret it if you don't start him, but yeah.
On Saka.
Yeah.
He played the last four games of the season for Arsenal. He started them. The only game he didn't start at Arsenal's last six games was the Crystal Palace game. Is he injured? Like, is he fully injured? Or is it just that Tuchel prefers Madueke?
I think from an Arsenal perspective, you're probably thinking their last four games, we want to see out this title, make sure we secure it. You play your best players. You could make a similar argument. You're in knockout stages now in the World Cup with England. You probably should start your best players as well. If they're available, he must be carrying something. Otherwise, it makes no sense. Because Madueke, like, he has no end product. And I actually think he's a pretty decent player for Arsenal. And I think he gets a bit more stick than is warranted. But, like, I think it's the first play of that game. He drives down the right wing and he just boots the ball and it goes way over everyone's head and straight out. And it's like, that's not up to the standard. Like, of what England are trying to achieve there. That's, you can't have your white winger not being able to cross the ball. So I don't know. Saka must be carrying something. Do you feel like there might even be better options, maybe not in the squad, but available sitting at home watching these games for the right wing? But yeah, I think at this point, if you're in a semi-final, if Saka's able to play 90 minutes or even just play 70 minutes, I think you start him now from now on. For me, it makes no sense.
Can we talk about Mbolo?
Oh,
and what the hell he was doing?
It is a complete head loss. I hate the theatrics after it as well. After the theatrics
from his teammates,
yeah, that's ridiculous. Like,
well, when the team,
they all saw he died.
Screaming is like, "Oh, you're gonna give him a red card now!" It's like, yes, that's how it works. It's like, Angelo is a red. You're correct.
They're all playing into this Argentina, the World Cup is rigged thing as well. Like, Xhaka waving his hands like this. It's like, come on, you know damn well what happened there.
It is the consistency of which rules are applied. It falls into the same thing as the Anderson Haaland stuff. It's like, okay, why was that a foul? And why is other things that happen in the box like that not a foul? Why does Mbolo get a booking here, but half the time, maybe more than half the time, when a player dives, they don't get booked?
Kane didn't get one against Jed Spence,
That is a dive. It's not a dive in a traditional sense, but it is. He does intentionally get himself tripped up to win a penalty. Why does he not get punished?
There's a game on against the Congo as well.
Yeah, that was
There is an agreement that a booking is a dive. The dive is a booking. That is within the rule book.
Yeah.
The fact that it's not applied for the vast majority of dives is probably where I think
this one they went back to check to see if you were going to book the other guy, and it's like, well, no, because your man dived. Okay,
that's a new thing for this World Cup, isn't it? That they can check second yellows. So that's what it was, you know. I can understand you're feeding your conspiracies or whatever, because it's not something we see often, and it's not something we see often because it wasn't a rule before now, and it's a new rule and whatever. That's grand, but I'd be with you on the consistency thing 100%. There's been a lot of inconsistency regarding a lot of different things across this World Cup, but it all comes back to, you're given a referee decision to make. What in the name of God are you doing? You've just scored, you're on top, Argentina are offering absolutely nothing, and you decide to do. I don't even know. I cannot for the life of me understand the logic behind what he was trying to do, considering he was already on yellow.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Even if he wasn't on yellow,
there wasn't that much to gain as well from doing it, really.
There's nothing.
The free kick in the middle of the park, you know, player picks up a yellow card.
Yeah.
Doesn't make that huge of a difference.
Alvarez, though, wasn't it?
Oh, outrageous.
That's how you get into a World Cup semi-final. Yeah. On the other games, so France get past Morocco. I thought they were pretty poor overall. They were missing key players going into it. But then Spain against Belgium. Senny Lammens. If anybody's in the red this weekend, it's Senny Lammens. That's bad, isn't it?
Yeah. That's not a being you'd worry about how he'll get on next season, though. You know, because
it puts doubt immediately into Man United fans now.
It's a really bad thing. It's a really bad thing to happen for him there. And it's a bad mistake. There's been worse mistakes. I can understand totally how it happened, but you'd just be, I would not like to be him right now.
Yeah. It's very similar to Nyland from Norway as well. It's quite a similar goal. I don't know. He's had such a good season as well. It's so tough to come into a game like that, though.
Yeah, Courtois so complete difficult. Dick afterwards in the mix zone, going, "Well, I want to stay on." It's like, well, I mean,
why didn't you?
You know, sit on the line there and refuse to come off. You know.
Yeah.
So the managers had to fall on his sword. I thought they did all right. I mean, they lost their essentially first choice central midfield.
Yeah, Tielemans is a killer. Him going, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's one of them as well. It was almost like a. This again feeds into why Lammens, I really not want to be Lammens. It was like an unexpected opportunity for the last of the golden generation that they've been described as. You know, they found themselves in this position. I mean, they were 2-0 down against Senegal and cruising out of competition and
yeah.
Suddenly were in a game, really in a game, to end up in a semi-final. And for something like that to happen is really not ideal for them. But it's Mikel Merino once again.
Yeah. And now, super sub legend.
Yeah.
Historic levels.
Yeah.
Arsenal have a lot of them. Martinelli, Havertz,
Trossard.
We're happy with the semi-final lineup, though.
Could do with some starters. Yeah.
As good as good as it gets.
Yeah. I think a random team coming, but none of the random teams coming would have been in good form. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. Morocco without their strikers.
And the injuries and suspensions that they would all have had, you'd be like, They're cannon fodder now, so yeah.
So, the World Cup's in the green again after a brilliant weekend. Just finally, the last thing we should touch on is the Wimbledon final.
Yeah.
We had a classic game between Sinner and Zverev. Sinner coming out on top and kind of hammering home himself as the king of the grass at the minute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was... Zverev was very good in the opening set, and then it was kind of going back and forth, 7-6 again in the second set, and then Sinner kind of just took over from there, really, didn't he?
Yeah.
There was a slip from Zverev in the third set, and he was holding his knee afterwards, and you're thinking, oh no, not again. But just perfect Sunday viewing, you would say.
Yeah, like you said, Ger, earlier on, it's almost too much. I only caught the last set live, but I'm a massive fan of Jannik Sinner. As a player, I think he's amazing. He's an incredible athlete, but as a person as well, he's very humble sort of player. Just listen to his interview after; he just speaks so well. And
are there still question marks over him?
I don't know.
Just out of
can't speak on that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I'm not, yeah. Like he obviously is past the play and all that, and there was.
Yeah, he's served his suspension. You know, yeah. I mean, he gets a short suspension. Other people who do the same thing as him get multi-year suspensions. Who are we to cast aspersions on the standards that tennis holds itself to? I do. I can't watch Zverev. I'm amazed the crowd aren't booing him. He's throwing the racket and didn't even get a warning for it. Like it's the end of the set and he throws the racket and. It's not the comedy one from earlier in the tournament where somebody threw a racket and shot into the crowd and took someone's head off and she got kicked out. But like, I mean, oh man, this man has a bad temper, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder. Yeah. Is that something that we need to keep an eye on?
I was disappointed with how good of a reception he got yesterday.
From everybody,
And that was really
from Sinner in the aftermath, it's like, oh, he's a great player. Agassi dropping into conversation during the tournament that he'd been for dinner with him recently.
Yeah.
You know, the check out Ben Rothenberg. Bounces by Ben Rothenberg is his. The Athletic are reporting on it, but Ben Rothenberg is basically pointing out this will not be mentioned on the BBC, which was essentially my point about Ali Bowie's last week. Like, this will not be mentioned. We're not mentioning it. Don't talk about it. It's not nothing to do with us. Like, oh, I wonder what that is. Oh, I wonder the few ripples in the crowd there about Ferv. They just must have done something to annoy them. That's how, if you're not allowed to talk about it, someone needs to stand up and talk about it.
Yeah.
Anyway.